Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Modis, and I'm your host, a Filipino-American, native New Yorker, currently based in Los Angeles, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you will hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and rural emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. I invite you to receive a dose of OT inspiration to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to highlight and extend a special thanks to TrueLearn and Picmonic, our sponsors. Picmonic is a visual mnemonic learning tool that's been research proven to increase retention and help students ace their exams. It uses audio-visual learning and intelligence-based repetition algorithms that really help with long-term retention while studying. It is an excellent learning resource and study aid for OT and OTA students. Picmonic has built a better way for students to prepare for tests, whether you're studying for classes or getting ready for the NVCOT exam. Try it for yourself and sign up today using the link in the show notes and using the code TRANSITIONSOT to score a discount of 20% off of your Picmonic membership. Happy studying! Hello, OT friends. So today I'm super excited to introduce you to our special guests. We are joined by not just one, but two incredible OTs who specialize in SURF therapy. I'd like to welcome to the podcast Naomi Matnick, a licensed pediatric occupational therapist who specializes in infant and child development, feeding therapy, sensory integration therapy, and SURF therapy in Los Angeles. She is the founder of Hang 10 Therapeutics. We are also joined by Brooke Tubbs, an occupational therapist currently practicing in an acute care setting. She works for Gnome SURF, a nonprofit SURF therapy organization in New England, exploring the use of surfing as a modality and intervention. So without further ado, here to inform us all more about their uncommon OT work and SURF therapy, welcome to the podcast, Naomi and Brooke.
Hello. Good to be here and super excited to hear more about Brooke's work as well, since it's my first time meeting her.
Yes. Thank you so much for having us on the podcast. I'm excited to meet Naomi too and see what SURF therapy is like on the other side of the country.
Oh, how fun. I'm happy to bring you two together and to be talking about this just because this is probably, if you were to ask me maybe, you know, 2 years ago before I started the podcast, okay, what kinds of episodes or whom would you like to hear from? And SURF therapy probably is one of my top three, right? So here we are 2 years later. Now I have, you know, two SURF therapists on the podcast. So thank you so much to both of you for taking the time just to share, you know, a little bit about your experiences with us. As usual, let's start by having you tell us a little bit about your background and perhaps some of your favorite occupations.
Sure. Absolutely. Brooke, do you want to take the floor?
Sure, absolutely. So I like to say that I live my life by creating experiences that I can share during icebreakers, because I am not a fan of icebreakers and get to know you. So I like to collect experiences to share for those and little facts about myself. I'm a Michigander at heart. I was born, raised, and then I went to undergrad in Michigan. And then I spent a year abroad in the Philippines on a Fulbright scholarship. So I got to expand my knowledge of different cultures, of different cuisines, of different religions. And that's really where I picked up surfing. Being from Michigan, I'd never surfed before. You don't really surf much in Michigan. So I didn't really get a chance to until I moved abroad. And then I got my OTD from Northern Arizona University. I graduated in 2022, so I'm just about a year out. And then I got into SURF therapy during the last 3 months of my OTD program with my capstone, and I completed it with a surf therapy company in Rhode Island called Gnome Surf. Now I live in Rhode Island. I moved out here and work at a community-based hospital as an acute care inpatient OT. And then during the summer months, I work as a surf therapist on the evenings and the weekends. I like to label myself as a practice scholar. I really enjoy being involved in research projects, reading literature for research, all of that fun for me things. And then some of my favorite occupations include being near or in the ocean, surfing, rollerblading. I love to travel, and I love to collect little odd facts that I can share just in general.
Thanks for sharing all of that, Brooke. Oh my gosh, I have like so many follow-up questions, but you know, we have time to keep, right? So
later, you can ask, we can follow up later.
Okay. Naomi, tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, so I grew up quite a few places. One of the places being Malaysia, and so also an overseas experience,
yeah,
and have really appreciated that in my life, just like the way it's made me open to cultures and just open to different people and ways of living and thinking. And then somehow ended up in Ohio for undergrad and grad. I went to the University of Findlay and got my master's there and graduated in 2016. And quite honestly, leaving OT school, I still didn't know what setting I wanted to work in. And then at the very end of my clinical rotations, I just got like a small taste of pediatrics and was like, well, that's the setting. And I have no clinical experience. Here I go. I just knew I was passionate about it at that time. And I've been OT for 7 years. And that whole time I've primarily been in pediatrics, specializing in sensory integration therapy as my main area of practice. I actually went to OT as a little kid for sensory integration. And I don't know if that's why I do that now, but it definitely holds a really special place in my heart. And have since ventured into infant development and most recently surf therapy, which I started learning about in 2020 during the pandemic. And just could not believe that it existed. I was like, this is crazy. You mean I could like be a therapist at the beach with surfing? And so my occupations that I love, one of them being surfing or just being in and around the water, it's incredibly therapeutic for me. Anything outdoors, I love to backpack. When I'm home, I enjoy cooking. I am learning to play the cello. I am 1 year in. That's been a lot of fun for me. It's super relaxing. Yeah, so that's just a little bit about me.
Oh, thank you. You're both so interesting. Oh my gosh, I want to hear you play the cello. I have also a bunch of follow-up questions and just comments, but I'll keep it short. So check this out. I'm half Filipino and half Malaysian.
Oh, wow.
Hey, that's so cool. Oh, wow. That's wild. All the world between the three of us.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know how that happened. I'm more Filipino than Malaysian, that's for sure. But you know,
I was born that in Malaysia. There. I mean, but...
Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I love it.
So thank you. I mean, such great, such fun tidbits about you. And I'm so happy to like learn more about that. Let's switch gears and talk a little bit about what inspired you to do this work.
Are you referring to surf therapy?
Yes, to surf therapy. Okay. I guess, you know, initially OT, right? And then sort of branching into surf therapy in particular.
Yeah, no, I can launch right into surf therapy. So even though like I did grow up, you know, Malaysia had the ocean, but but of course Ohio does not. And I also have lived in Kentucky and that does not. But I think I always wanted to be a surfer. I think I attribute that to Mary-Kate and Ashley's surfing videos in the 90s. But so then when I moved out to California, I thought, okay, I'm a full-blown adult, but I'm going to learn to surf. And so started learning to surf when I moved out here 5 years ago. And then, like I said, I had always wanted to I'd always wanted to do the work I do in nature and on the beach. In college, I worked renting kayaks on the beach. And I thought, even then I was like, wow, if I could do this for a living, that would be great. Not knowing that surf therapy existed. So fast forward to all of this time and loving the water for myself and finding so much solace in the water, and then realizing that surf therapy existed. And primarily my impetus for getting into this work was through a Groundswell Community Project with Natalie Small. So finding their company first, and I hardcore stalked her and reached out to her and was like, oh my gosh, I have to talk to you. I have to learn about this. And got to attend some of their classes and saw how surf therapy was so wonderful for myself as an adult. And then starting to really put two and two together with the work I do of sensory integration. And that was kind of the trajectory of what got me here today.
Ah, love that.
Yeah. I'm so glad you connected with the Groundswell community. I've been so curious about them.
Yeah.
You know, and what they, in the work that they do, because it sounds amazing.
Yeah. It's incredible what they do.
Oh, I love that you can both be a resource to each other now. And yeah, because, you know, I saw both of your eyes light up when you talked about that surfer lady. And when you talk about this organization, some of us who are not in the industry are not too familiar with these terms. But again, these are significant names in your industry, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a hero. She's for sure one of the heroes. Yeah, she would probably
include her in our show notes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And Groundswell too, right?
Yeah. So my kind of origin story for surf therapy really began when I was living abroad. I really got hit with a wave of culture shock, of loneliness, sinking into kind of like the depression state of like, I left my whole family. I don't speak this language. I don't know anybody here. I'm living in a stranger's house. You know, all it just kind of sunk me down. And I finally went to this little island called Siargao. I hired a surf instructor and I kept falling off the board so many times. And then the first time I caught a wave, it was like my eyes are, you know, open to the world again. And I'm, you know, I feel like me again. And so I really felt like I could breathe. And then you get the adrenaline rush. And if you're an adrenaline junkie, that is intoxicating to you. Then you catch a wave and you're going fast and, or you fall, you know, you're still getting that same sort of adrenaline. And I kept coming back to surfing because it challenged me in a way that I hadn't been challenged. And it really forces you to connect your mind to your body, to your emotions, to your sensory regulation. And it really provokes that flow state that we really look for in OT that is so healing for all of us. And when I was thinking of capstone ideas, one of my professors said, don't be the person who tries to do surf therapy in, you know, in December in Spain where it's freezing. And I said, okay, I'm going to do exactly that. I'm going to do exactly what you're telling me not to do, because I think this is a wonderful idea and I'm going to make it work for me. And so that really just kind of jump-started me into like, now I'm going to really think about like surf therapy as a form of therapy outside of kind of how therapeutic it was for me. And the rest is kind of history from there.
Ah, that's so great. And I can relate to that flow state that you're talking about. You're just in a groove and nothing can stop you, and you know, you're present, right? And I can see how surfing, I've gone surfing a few times and gotten, I take lessons everywhere I go as much as I can. I'm not good at all, but I really do love it too. And I love everything. Yeah. Just being in the water, just being on the board and, you know, kind of looking at the waves and trying to pretend like I know what's going on. how healing, right? Even just being in that space, and then on top of the other things that you're doing with the clients that you serve. So maybe this is a great time to kind of segue into that. Could each of you share with us a little bit more about the uncommon work that you do? Maybe the population that you serve, some of the needs that you're addressing?
Yeah, I can jump right in for that one. So I work in New England. I work in Rhode Island with this company named Gnome Surf, which is a nonprofit company that provides surf therapy services to individuals across the lifespan. We surf with athletes as young as a year and a half up to athletes as old as 60 plus. I would say about 90% of the population that we serve are considered neurodivergent. Or have, you know, a diagnosis of some sort, that families share with us. And, you know, those that don't always fit in with that category, you know, have anxiety, mental health issues, or, you know, everyone has, you know, some sort of mental health, everyone mm-hmm. has mental health, right? So mm-hmm. even if they don't aren't considered the neurodivergent, they still receive the benefits of surf therapy as a therapy. Those biopsychosocial benefits that, you know, surfing can provide. So that's kind of the population that we serve. Gnome is kind of a unique surf therapy organization. There are a lot of surf therapy organizations across the globe. And Gnome is a little bit unique because we provide individual sessions, 45-minute individual sessions weekly. Our athletes can have, you know, weekly sessions with the same instructor, the way you would have a weekly session of OT with like an outpatient clinic or something like that. So you can really see skills build the way you can in like an outpatient clinic or throughout, you know, a different setting of OT, a more common setting. And then we have people who just buy, you know, they just come for one session or they come once a month or, and then we have, camps on the weekends where we have a kind of an organization that comes in. They bring, you know, maybe it's an organization that serves individuals with Down syndrome. So they bring a bunch of people who have Down syndrome in, and we surf with, you know, people who like families who kind of know each other. And it's this whole big event on the beach. We do painting, we do yoga. We have instructors in the water. We have people cheering on people. We have a celebration at the end where they, you know, get a certificate of celebrate like success and, you know, a little thank you gift for participating. And it's really kind of a family event too. They bring kids, they bring their siblings, they bring their friends, you know, it's really a huge kind of hoopla of surf therapy, which is really great. And we just started a girls team that empowers, you know, young women to, you know, learn to surf, but also kind of get involved in the program. So they become junior instructors. And then we also just started a women's empowerment kind of, they call it Salty Moms, but not everyone's a mom. So they're revamping the name, I think, eventually, but Salty Ladies to kind of promote the same, right? Like caregiver mm-hmm. wellness to promote just women empowerment of a group of women coming together, no expectations in what you're doing, but let's, you know, build connections together and enjoy the ocean. So that's kind of a bit about Gnome and the populations we serve and kind of the things we provide.
Oh, thank you for sharing some of that. You know, one might assume that surf therapy is focusing solely on, you know, sort of like the physicality, right? And mm-hmm. the motor skills required to surf. And of course, the sensory integration that's also incorporated with all of that. But it sounds like these events also have a really strong kind of social component to it, where you're bringing families together, right? And it's almost like a support system.
Absolutely. It really is. And even like the one-on-one sessions is so socially stimulating for our athletes. Like yesterday I was out on the board with an athlete who his parents said that he doesn't tend to interact too much with other people. There's not a lot of that, you know, back and forth conversation. And out on the board, he is just chatting away with me, with the other athletes on the board. We come into the shore, he's chatting with his parents, you know, we come and just sit, and his mom is like, he's never like this, you know, he's never this social. So like, what a you know, that's not something you always anticipate coming, but what a way if someone's, you know, feeling that regulation, right? That they feel, you know, they're more regulated, they're more able to process emotions or process, you know, this conversation or whatever it may be. So yeah, a lot more social than you think. And that's what surfing is too, right? Like surfing is so such a social thing when you're out there on the waves, which is really cool.
Ah, thank you.
I'm fascinated by that. all the ways you guys are incorporating it with the different populations. Mm-hmm. And I think when I share like what I just talked about with like the trajectory of what got me into surf therapy, it's really a lot of excitement. But when I look at the actual work I'm doing, it really was based out of how I felt as a surfer and how I feel as a surfer. Noticing in myself, oh my gosh, I feel so much more regulated. Or like you said, I feel so much more like myself and I feel so much more, I don't know, fulfilled and happy. And I've had this social time with my friends and I've also got to overcome challenges and things like that. And so now the work I do, I think I took that. And then I also take what I'm doing with sensory integration and I've put all of that together. And so for Hangtan Therapeutics, it's primarily for early elementary through early adolescence, with that focus on kiddos who have sensory integration needs, neurodiversity, so ADHD, higher level autism spectrum. But then as I've gotten to talk to families and, you know, consider the needs of, you know, people around me, it might not be just in that little box. It could also be, hey, my kiddo just struggles with some of those like social emotional pieces. And so, oh, okay, we're going to use surfing for that. And how do we help with social skills? Like you're saying, Brooke, and like for that one, it's really encouraging the kids I work with to express to me what they need in that moment. Am I ready to get on the board? Do I just want to hang out in the water and kind of get used to that experience? And really giving them that autonomy. And so then kind of letting it expand into, okay, surf therapy. Yes, we want to get to those OT goals, sensory processing, motor development, you know, maybe even cognitive skills like impulse control and executive function. But how are we just using it to help them as humans? And I love that the ocean can kind of facilitate what I'm doing. Yeah. Cause it's creating some of the challenges naturally. And as my work evolves, I would love to expand into more of what I'm hearing with what you guys are doing. Cause there's so many populations that can benefit and it's all intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
And like you, my sessions are mainly 45 to 50 minutes, sometimes an hour. I feel like I get a little bit more flex at the beach, which is nice. And then if there are specific OT goals, I'll keep that in mind. And we'll try to target those. Sometimes we'll target them on the beach ahead of time. Sometimes I'll do a hybrid where I'll see kids on the beach and at home. It's just kind of flexible. And then the primary goal is how do we take whatever we've gained in the ocean and how do we continue that on throughout the day? And that's the big carryover.
Ah, well, I definitely want to hear more about, you know, what a typical session might be like, right? But before we delve into that, I want to kind of take a couple of steps back and ask you both the big question. How did you get there? What was your path? Tell us a little bit about how you got from OT school to now, you know, and I know you might've touched upon it a little bit already with the networking stuff, but anything that you think would be helpful for our listeners, because that's what they all want to know.
You want me to jump on it? I can jump on it.
Jump on, yeah.
So I, like I said, I started my search for surf therapy when I was looking for a capstone project. I hate to admit that I was in class Google searching surf therapy in the US. Hopefully my professors don't don't hear that and think worse of me. But I really was, I was, you know, in our capstone class or in other classes, and I was really trying to find how can I get in touch with someone, an OT specifically, who has done this work or who is doing this work. And I listened to a TED talk by an OT by the name of Carly Rogers, which we kind of hit on earlier. She gave a TED talk about surf therapy, which is really great to watch if you're into it. I just kind of found her email and crossed my fingers and sent it on its way. And being, you know, the kind OTs that our professions are like has includes, she emailed me right back, set up a time to meet on Zoom. She told me she doesn't work in this space anymore, but she introduced me to a woman named Chris, I'm going to butcher her last name, Promacio, I think, Chris Promacio, who is the CEO of the International Surf Therapy Organization, which Carly also helped start. So that's how she is connected with that. And I met with Chris over Zoom also, and she loved that I wanted to do this. She was a great help. She knows all of the surf therapists, like surf therapy organization, like CEOs heads throughout the whole globe.
Wow.
Yeah. So she's
connected with anyone better.
Yeah. So she's a great resource. And she sent me to an organization in Australia originally, and I was supposed to go there. They do weekly sessions with kiddos, who have disabilities out in Australia, and I was supposed to go there for my capstone, but COVID shut everything down. So I couldn't go. And Chris then got me in contact with, someone on the East Coast with this man named Chris, who owns Gnome Surf. And I really wanted a surf therapy organization that had OT involved, because I had no clue what I was doing. And mm-hmm. I needed some guidance of like, what could OT look like in this space? And there was an OT volunteering with his organization, and I thought that was my best shot. And so I moved to Rhode Island for my capstone. And I got to go to Costa Rica for a week and a half, because they Gnome has a happy camp based out of Costa Rica for the winter, because it's way too cold here to surf with people in the winter. So they bring families in for a retreat with, they bring the kids in, they do surf therapy, the families get retreats, you know, it's a whole family experience. Their siblings mm-hmm. come, it's really relaxing. There's yoga, there's horse rides, there's zip lining, you know, all the fun things that Costa Rica, you know, has, and plus surf therapy on top of it. So that was really my first introduction into this is what it's like to see an athlete on a board and what they experience and how it can affect them. Mm-hmm. And then I graduated and Chris offered me a job during, you know, while I was studying for my board exams. And I said, who wouldn't do this? And I packed up again, moved out to Rhode Island, and I've been here ever since.
Oh, what a great story. What a great story. Yeah. Like, we're all beaming with like smiles here.
So fun.
That's, wow. You're so driven. I mean, you did this all. Like, you contacted these folks, you reached out, and look at the results that you got. Right? And I highlight that because I think, our listeners need to hear that. Like, you really have to be driven in this kind of work, right? Because it's not mm-hmm. just going to fall on your lap. But when you connect with the right people, look at what happens.
Yeah. And you can't be afraid to like, just send that cold email, you know, cold call someone, send that email. You never know what's going to happen. And
if you don't do it, it's not going to happen. Right. Mm-hmm. So you have to at least try and put your, mm-hmm. you know, put your, just put yourself out there.
Because
the universe is not going to know this is something that needs to go back to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh, Brooke, so,
congratulations.
Got so much excitement welling up in the things you're talking about. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to get to Rhode Island and I have to get to Costa Rica.
Come on out.
I want to. I want to hang out with you guys. Yeah, surf with you there with your kids.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And I apologize. The question was, how do we get people?
Let me, Let me find it. I forgot it too. Hold on. Yeah. Oh, it was really, how did you get there? Can you just describe your path?
Yeah, I feel like you're kind of talking about, like, you do have to be driven, especially in this kind of work right now, because it's like internationally, there are quite a few surf therapy companies, but then per capita and like nationally, sometimes it can feel really isolating. At least that's how it has felt at times for me. And so, you know, I also, you know, really helped putting myself out there and connecting with the people that I did know of at the time to get that guidance. So it's like, okay, I knew that I love surfing and I know that I'm a surfer and I know I'm an OT, but how do I put these things together and not having a lot of to pull from? So the biggest thing is just, I think the first thing, knowing that you want to do it and trusting yourself and trusting your knowledge and being brave to just, when you feel the time is right, to just step out and start doing it, which is really what I had to do. So I got a lot of guidance from Natalie and from Groundswell. I have since then talked to Chris on the phone just a little bit. Not Chris from Nome, but the other Chris from International Surf Therapy Organization. I'm starting now to reach out to other surf therapy companies within like the Southern California area, to hopefully pull information from them. But other than that, it's really just been going to the beach with my kiddos. And I say that they're my best teachers because as I've worked with them, I've gotten to kind of tweak it. And it's just like, you have to be, I guess, creative. And you have to be willing to tweak things probably a little bit faster than you would in a more traditional setting. And yeah, I guess creativity and the willingness to talk to people and the willingness to learn from people. Cause you really are becoming, at least I felt like I was becoming the student all over again. Cause now I'm in this whole new world and there's not a really large framework for it. And I'm kind of writing my own playbook sometimes. I don't know if that's how you feel at all, Brooke, but if you're passionate about it and you're willing to just be brave and step out and do it. And trust me, when I'm talking to providers, sometimes I feel like, I don't know if you guys saw Cool Runnings, like we're the Jamaican bobsled team. Sometimes mm-hmm. I feel like I'm telling people about a Jamaican bobsled team. They're like, surf therapy, what's that? And you just have to be like, this is what it is. And this is why it's valid. And just be brave and go out there and do it.
I love that analogy. Cool run-ins. Yeah. But I have to say, I'm speaking to two of the most courageous surf therapists I know. You've both really put yourselves out there and, you know, are really connecting with the right people. And I think, you know, it's not just about connecting, but also learning, right? So I could hear from both of your stories that you're just richer OTs today because of everything that you've learned from these contacts, right? And one thing I don't want to forget to mention is something that you mentioned earlier, Naomi, that you just picked up surfing like 5 years ago, right? And then here you are like doing this. So I think another important tidbit for our listeners, and again, speaking to your bravery and your, you know, your courage, like it's not, you don't have to be surfing all your life, I guess, right? Like to be able to go out there and do this kind of thing. But rather what I'm hearing is that make the right connections and through those connections, you learn, right? Including the work that you're doing with the clients that you're serving. So thank you for that. So great to hear. Now I want to hear more about what happens in these sessions. Can you each give us an example of what a typical session might be like? What are some goals that you might be working on with some of these kids or folks?
Yeah, I feel like I can jump in. I feel like this will be interesting because I think just from Brooke sharing about who you work with and what you do, it might be different. But so like I said, right now, my primary population is elementary to early adolescence with sensory processing or neurodiversity, or I didn't mention this, but I also work with kids in the twice exceptional population. So kiddos who have really high IQs, but maybe struggle with some of the more motor skills or social emotional skills. So what it looks like, it's, for me, it's really important that kids start out the session by checking in with their body. So we'll do a quick like physical and emotional check-in on the beach. I like them to be the one to do things like put on their sunscreen or put on their wetsuit, because we're wanting to kind of help them from start to finish, go through that process. So that's going to take, that's going to take strength and motor planning and sensory tolerance to do all of those things. It's going to take a social component. Then we'll usually transition into, we'll practice some skills on the beach. So that could be just even the body awareness of where do I go on the board? Where do I lay on the board? We'll practice some of our paddling. We'll practice some of our pop-ups. But then from there, it really varies, because for me, it's so child dependent on their comfort level with the water. And again, I really, really stress in my sessions, letting the child be the leader of the session and what their body is comfortable with trying to challenge them a little bit. So then that could be anything from, we're just literally jumping over waves together in our wetsuits, to we're kind of just barely in the water on a surfboard on our tummy, all the way to, okay, I'm gonna try to pop up and catch a wave. In my sessions, we primarily stay in the whitewash. But what I find is once kids get in the water and once they're comfortable, it's really hard to get them out of the water. And it's so cool to see the transformation of what starts to happen in the water, including becoming more regulated. It's so cool to see their skills develop as well. So maybe kids who don't have as great core strength or as great bilaterality, meaning like recognizing both sides of the body, or just learning like how to read the waves. So it's, and that transpires in the water. And then when we come out of the water, we'll do kind of a closing time, check in with our body, check in with our physical body, our emotional body. And at that point, often my kids are just like really excited, and it's hard to like kind of be like, okay, let's talk about how we feel, but it's evident how they feel. And so those are some of the components that we're working on, but that's what a typical session will look like for me.
Oh, how fun.
So much
fun. I want to have a session with you. Sounds like one of my surf lessons, you know, when you kind of pop up on the beach, you're not really in the water yet, but
yeah.
That's so great. So 45 minutes, these sessions, you said, and one-on-one, correct?
Yeah, one-on-one, 45 to 50 minutes, sometimes an hour. It just really depends. I allow the flexibility for the hour, because I have some kids that I've noted that it just takes them longer to transition from being on the beach or suiting up to being in the water. Mm-hmm. I have the availability in my schedule right now, and I kind of account for that. But the kiddos that are, you know, able to kind of like suit up and get right in, then we'll do that. And then sometimes it'll be more of like a 45, 50 minute session, but one-on-one for now.
And do you provide all of the equipment, like the wetsuits, the surfboards?
Right now I just provide surfboards, and then I have kiddos get wetsuits, and for super young kiddos, if we need to, we'll do life jackets.
Yeah. The water is pretty cold in California. I know it's cold in New England, but it's pretty cold over here too. Yeah. You still need a wetsuit.
Definitely need wetsuits. If kids are just trying it out, sometimes I'll just provide the suit for them. I'll rent them a suit. And then if not, if they think they're going to be doing it long-term, then I ask that they get a suit for themselves.
So fun. You're right that ours looks a little bit different. So, at Nome, I think this year we have around 40 instructors, 40 quote unquote therapists. There are of people who are, you know, licensed as a therapist, me and another, there's a CODA, who are kind of the real, and then there's another OT who I don't think is part of our organization this year. But we were the real big like therapy brains within the organization. So that poses challenges to doing it, you know, more traditionally of like, what are my OT goals? What are my, you know, what does my session look like? Because I get, you know, athletes who surf with one instructor and then they come over to me and then they go with somebody else. So it's hard to kind of be like, well, now every time you're with me, let's all the time put your wetsuit on. Let's make sure you're, you know, kind of doing those skills. But I really, and usually our athletes come wearing wetsuits. They are usually put them on before they surf with us. But if they don't, then that's something we'll do together. Same with life jackets. So I put a life jacket on almost anybody because I can grab it instead of grabbing the athlete. But usually we kind of do a very light body check-in, like a, how are we doing today? How are you feeling? How do you feel about the waves behind me? How do you feel about the seaweed in the water? Kind of like thing. I usually talk to either the athlete or the parent about if I don't know them about the ability to swim, about the ways that they communicate best, if they have any sensory challenges with anything, what, you know, is it seaweed? Do they not like water in their eyes? Those kind of things. If they have any tells that they're getting overstimulated or emotional or in pain, things like that. And then usually we'll do, you know, a beach practice of here's the board, here's the tip, like the nose, here's the fins. That's what you have to be careful of. Here's some safety for the water. Especially when we have like six instructors going at the same time, it's like, be careful of, you know, them coming into, you have to really be aware of them. And then, yeah, we hop on the board and we go out. Because I surf with such a wide variety of athletes, I have people who I am working on a lot of the fine tuning skills of like, they're ready, they're paddling out, they're popping up by themselves. I can just give them a little push and tell them when to stand. And then I have the athletes who you really have to give them a lot of cues for awareness on the board, where they need to lay down, where they need to sit. I usually hop on the back of the board with them, so that it's more balanced. And then if they're able to stand, if they choose, if they want to, they can stand up. Usually I like have a helping hand for balance until they don't need it, or I'll get to my knees and pop them up so that then they can feel, you know, what it's like to stand. Some of my other instructors can stand on the board with an athlete so that they can really help them to get up. So I'm not there yet. I can't do that skill, but, it's
hard enough to stand on. Yeah,
I know. I can barely stand on my own, so I don't try and stand. But it's a lot of, cueing and understanding, you know, what types of cues work best for what athlete, and, you know, making sure like, and you can see the difference really of like how excited they are on the beach. And then as soon as they hit the water and they feel like the lull of the waves, then they instantly start listening to you and you're like, nope, we're not falling off the board right now. You know, like first we're going to catch a wave and then we'll fall off. So like, and then you can just like, if I would have told them that on the beach before we got in the water, there's no way they would have listened. Mm-hmm. They're not regulated enough to hear me. But as soon as we get into the water, then they're much, much more regulated. And then you can see it in like their stimulation increasing as they get more excited for catching the waves, that they stop listening a little bit more, which is kind of an interesting like regression, but it's really fun. And then, you know, sometimes you have athletes who really love to watch the waves. And so you'll have them on the board facing one way and then they're, you know, wiggly and they switch around on you and you're like, well, now what do I do? How do I get them? And you're like, we'll just ride this wave backwards. That's fine. That works on your balance. That works on everything you need to work on. You know, we'll be flexible with it. And then we take the board out of the water and we do a leather check-in. Like I check in a lot too of like, how are you feeling about these waves? Are we going too deep? You want to go deeper? Like, do you want to take a break? Are you tired? Do you want to just sit on the board for a while? Like a lot of those kind of intermittent check-ins to see how the athlete on my board is doing. So I guess that's kind of what a session looks like. It really depends on the person I'm surfing with, honestly.
Well, thanks for giving us a good, I don't know, I have a visual of, you know, you out there on your knees propping up a kid.
Yeah.
That's kind of the visual that I
have. You can see me like my hands on there, like all the way up. Sometimes they sit on your head.
Oh my gosh.
You really have to have strong.
I just remember the OT practice cover where you were in it and there is a kid there and you were kind of,
Probably propping
him up. Also. But I love the thoughtfulness in your sessions. I love that there's 100 check-ins at all points of the activity. You're checking about, you know, just concerns, worries, fears, things that might get in the way, right, of how the session would go. So I really like that there's a lot of that piece kind of incorporated into things. And so your sessions, Brooke, are also about an hour. And even though there's a group of therapists there, all of these sessions are one-on-one.
Yeah. So we offer 45-minute sessions that are one-on-one. Families can book 2-on-1 or 3-on-1 sessions, as in like 3 athletes to 1 instructor. And we just flip, like I had a 2-on-1 a couple of days ago where I just had one of the athletes and then I switched and caught a wave with the other athlete. Well, one didn't really want to catch a wave, so we just sat on the board and did some balance and did some let's get used to the water kind of things. But usually they're 1-on-1 like that. And we usually have at least 3 instructors in the water, which is why I say ours is really social, right? Because we have an instructor, we have an athlete, and then we have a couple more. Sometimes we have people shadowing. I have 2 fieldwork students that shadow me too, some 2 OT students. So we have, you know, them in the water too. So it's really, there's a lot of people in the water. And you asked Naomi about equipment as well. And so Nome has special boards that are custom made for us. They're 9-foot boards, which are really long. They're extra wide. They're foam boards, so they're really thick and buoyant. There's a handle in the middle of them so that they're much easier to carry. Yeah, Naomi's like, oh yeah. So they're much easier to carry, but it makes it a lot easier to keep yourself and an athlete on the board with you and have them balance. And then we have custom stand-up paddle boards that we use for bigger athletes, bigger adults, people who are taller or maybe have a little extra challenge balancing, that you can use that. And it's a lot easier to balance. It's a lot harder to manage in the water, but a lot easier for them to balance with. So we have, and they all have little gnomes on them. Yeah. So yeah, my boss has a lot of good branding for our company and has found a lot of ways to make it easier, you know, more safe for our athletes too.
Yeah. So is that a product that is like sold by the company too? Like for those, you know, for folks who might get really into it and want their own surfboard?
Yeah, actually, I don't know how many we sell, but yeah, I know some people who have bought our big, huge boards as their own.
Yeah. Huh. Totally see that. Oh, okay. So there's a lot of angles, right? There's not just the actual services that you're providing. Now we're talking about products and, you know, swag.
Right? Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I'm even thinking even just from a fundraising perspective, right? I mean, these are people would may want to donate to some causes or some of these special causes by purchasing some of these items. So anyway, my light bulbs are kind of, you know, ding, 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 ding in my head. So now that we're talking about money matters, would you be able to share with our listeners anything money matter related? How are your services funded? How do you charge for your services? And yeah, anything you feel comfortable with sharing.
You want me to take it, Naomi? Or do you want to go first?
I can go first.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, as a company right now, I'm for profit and, you know, just getting started and figuring out, what's going to be best for the community. So I'm still learning in that aspect. So that being said, right now, my sessions are private pay per the hour. I also offer package deals, and that comes at a discount if families want to sign up for 3 sessions or 5 sessions and so on. And then I use actually regular OT billing codes. So if it's, you know, if it's motor in coordination or, you know, whatever it may be, and then provide super bills for families, and then always letting families know that because that's out of network, that's going to cover, you know, possibly 0 to 100% of the care. I have been talking with a friend of a friend who does a lot in the nonprofit world, and wanting to figure out maybe in the future transitioning more into that nonprofit sector and being able to get more funding so that it can be accessible for more people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that cost doesn't become a barrier for people. Yeah. And I can kind of become, you know, more creative and like bringing in other avenues to offer this as a service for people. So that is right now. And I would love to hear what NOM is doing. And I feel like, I hope the OT board doesn't come after me for using like regular billing codes for some therapy. But that's what I'm doing. And that's kind of how it works. And I forgot to mention, typically I'll meet with a kiddo in home for 1 session before we meet on the beach. And we'll do a regular eval so that I can really understand what those pieces are and what we're trying to accomplish when we get to the beach. But I hope that answers the question.
It absolutely does. And then some, right? And I was even curious to hear if you've gotten any feedback from any of the parents with regards to your super bills and, you know, if they've had any good results with that or
been reimbursed. I feel like, unfortunately, the feedback I get is that super bills just often don't cover a lot. Sometimes they'll cover a little bit. Sometimes it won't cover anything. Right now, as you guys all know, I'm just getting started. I'm a one-man show. And so I try to see where I can meet families in terms of funding. Right now I don't have the flexibility for a lot of wiggle room, but I do try to have that conversation to try to make it as accessible as possible.
Yeah.
It's cost for sessions.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that. So right now it's private pay. You're looking to maybe, you know, going into some kind of nonprofit status, you know, and it doesn't have to be your entire business, right? Like you can have a nonprofit sort of set up and still do your private pay stuff on the side. I'm already thinking of, you know, like maybe individuals who do something similar. Like I've spoken with OTs who do adaptive climbing and adaptive sports, right? Also with kiddos. And I'm curious how they sort of document their services and bill for it, because we're talking about the same codes that you're talking about, right?
Right.
So let's talk after.
Yeah, we'll love to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's again, these are options, right? Like that's one way to do it. And then there's also private pay. And again, a combination of both can also be a scenario.
Right? Yeah. Definitely. Love to hear more.
Yeah. And I was just talking with my boss at NOM yesterday about how we can get into like private pay, figure out a way to do that through NOM too, because NOM is a nonprofit right now, but figuring out a way to like dive into that sector too for our some of our athletes. So I would love to also pick your brain about how that is going for you too, because I don't work in like pediatrics either. So I'm like, I don't know what codes to use. But so now NOMSURF, NOMSURF is a nonprofit organization. So we get funding from grants, from donations. We have someone who is a grant writer for NOM. So there's a lot of grants that they apply for that they get. We have a lot of big sponsors and a lot of people who just really like to donate to the cause. So families private pay for a session, whether it's a, you know, 45-minute session, or they can, you know, book a 8-week or 8 session kind of all encompassing like pass, or they call it a pass, for a little bit cheaper for a discounted rate. Some families are able to get that discounted through using donations, through using the grant funds that the organization has. You have to apply for it, I believe, and, you know, justify your need for it. I think, I don't really know all the back ends of that, cause I don't really work in I don't see the billing side of everything, but I know that people are able to get kind of scholarships, they call them, to discount the price. Our prices, I believe it's $75 for a 45-minute session. They're able to get some of that discounted. Not all of the athletes do that. But a lot of our athletes that's open to a lot of our athletes, which is really nice. Makes it a little more accessible for a lot of the families that we have that come and surf with us. And then I get paid, $25 for every session that I do, for every 45-minute session that I do. That will go up just a little bit this year. I'm not quite sure the exact number, but, you know, cause I'm coming back for another year, it'll go up a little bit. But that's kind of the normal pay rate for anybody. It didn't matter that I was an OT to begin with. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of base pay for a new instructor joining the team.
Got it.
But that's kind of how the pay. And then we have our camps on the weekends, usually are free for the individuals who come. Usually they're sponsored by one of our sponsors. They pay for the whole camp, and then people can sign up for free to come until we hit our capacity, and then we have to close the sign up.
Got it. Okay. Well, thanks for sharing some of those details. Super helpful just kind of, you know, get mm-hmm. an idea, right? And are you there full time? And I guess two questions. Are you there full time in the summer, and then you're kind of juggling this with your acute care job, or?
No. I work like 7 to 3:30 at the hospital. And then I come to the beach and we surf at multiple locations in New England. The beach I surf at is a town beach, so they allow us to be there from certain times in the evenings. And so I start at 5:45 and I go to 8 till 8. So I usually have 3 sessions. And then I drive home.
Wow. Long day for you.
Yeah. But it's so nice.
I mean, it's worth it. You're watching the sunset every day is what I'm getting, right?
Yeah. Yep. Essentially, as long as there's no fog.
Right. How wonderful. Well, you're young. So now is the time, right? Yeah. Now is the time to, you know, get this in. I was just thinking as you were telling this story that, you know, like what you're gaining from this experience, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so you're getting paid your hourly rate, but what you're gaining, I mean, you're basically learning how to run a nonprofit in this mm-hmm. particular area, right? And the ins and outs of that. So yeah. I think that's just so valuable. And I'm happy that, you know, you're there and that you're an OT and that you're, you know, sharing our lens with, mm-hmm. you know, with that group. It sounds like a really influential group too.
Yeah, they really, when I started my capstone project, Chris was all in with OT. He was like, you know, so much more about a lot of these things than I do. He's like, you could help me train, you know, new instructors. You can help, build these things. We have, these new, they're like surf training boards. I think they're called Gibson boards that are kind of like a slack line on like a curved piece of wood. So you kind of practice your balance. He's like, I want you to tell me all the sensory things that work with this board so that we can promote it to, you know, the company that, you know, is giving us these boards with our name on them. And then we can mm-hmm. share how to use these, you know, make instructional videos for how to use these at home to promote mm-hmm. use of these boards.
Wow.
And they're in the, he's like, I want to take on more OT students. I want to take on more. I want you to like share all this knowledge. So they're all in on our profession in this setting. And they are always excited to hear, you know, if I have something to say, if I'm like, hey, we should do this, or like, hey, let's add this to our training so that they understand, whatever it may be. So they are, they are fully invested, as you know, as we are, in surf therapy with OT involved.
They see the light.
Yeah. Yes. Which is amazing.
They see the light and the value. So congrats. I mean, that's just, you know, to work for an organization where you just feel that kind of support. It's so empowering, right? And it just really makes you feel, it takes a lot of the stress off of a situation where you weren't getting, if you weren't getting supported. So I'm happy you're there. And I think that kind of told us a little bit about my next question. So the next question is centered around, you know, having you share with us some successes and maybe some challenges that you've had recently in your role. So I attribute that as a success, you know, really, again, having them see the light, and now they're even thinking of other roles that you could take on in the organization, mm-hmm. other than just the actual instruction, right?
It's, yeah.
Also, you know, really uplifting the core foundations of the organization. So mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's not necessarily always like an easy thing to be a part of. It takes its toll on your body. I like my hand today, I can't really bend it because I banged it on a board. My hands, like, they get so dry that they peel because I'm holding this foam board so tightly so it doesn't hit a child and knock them over. There's, you know, it certainly takes this challenge on your body. And then I think that another one of the challenges that we face a lot, because we do have so many people in the water at one time, is just safety. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our instructors are younger. A lot of them are 18, you know, and yet I didn't know how to be fully aware of my surroundings at 18. I didn't know, you know, especially I didn't know, all of the ins and outs of working with individuals with sensory processing challenges or impulsivity or cognitive delays. I didn't know, you know, how to fully work with these individuals. And so there's always, always an extra layer of safety. And when I'm in the water, I feel like I'm always like, where are my 18-year-old surf instructors? I need to like keep an eye on to make sure that they're keeping an eye on their athletes, like, well, too. So I think that safety is like, and they're great instructors. They're good with kids. It's just, I don't know if I trust them enough to, which is probably on me too, right? So, and I just think that's just natural being in the water. You're always kind of like, where are these small athletes that I, you know, I've seen on the board? Like, where are they now? Yeah. Are they in the water? Are they catching a wave? And then like, where's the board coming at? If I'm catching a wave, is there another one coming at me? Is my athlete safe? So I think safety is probably one of their like biggest challenges. Cause there's just so many moving parts to it.
Yeah. I could totally see that. Yeah. How about you, Naomi? Any successes or challenges, or maybe start with challenges and end with successes?
Sure. Yeah. And I'm laughing at the things Brooke is saying only because it's so true. Like, yeah, I agree that I think one of the biggest challenges is the physicality of it for the instructor, because we are having to really account for all of these things that our surfers or our kiddos or the athletes aren't having to account for, and rightly so, because I personally don't necessarily want, I mean, I'm teaching them about the elements of the water and water safety, but ultimately I'm there to keep them safe. And that's what I always tell my kiddos is, you know, that's my job, to keep you safe. And, you know, sometimes that might mean I'm going to grab you and the board is going to go flying, but as long as I have you in the water. Being just very aware of the surroundings, not only for yourself, but also for your kid on the board, so that they walk away from the experience feeling successful instead of afraid. I think because one time I like grabbed a leash so that the board wouldn't purl into the ocean. And I think it like really tweaked my wrist, but that doesn't always happen. It's just like, a lot of like physical things that come along with it. And then I think a challenge interpersonally for me has been educating families on what I'm doing educating them that it's not just a surf lesson. This is a therapeutic tool, and we're kind of working on these therapeutic means. And you know, your kid may or may not pop up right away and start surfing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want a surf teacher, please go find a surf teacher, because I'm sure they're going to be better at that than me. So just like making sure people kind of understand, I guess some of the successes, is just like seeing the research come into play in like real time, right? Like, Okay, read about how surf therapy is supposed to be really good for you, and then I see how surf therapy is good for me. But the coolest thing is when, kind of Brooke, you have touched on some of these things, when you see it happening for the kids. I have a kid I work with who has ADHD, and we were sitting there on what I thought to be one of the choppiest days of the year. And he told me, he's like, I feel so calm right now. And I was like, whoa, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. Or just the way that some of the kids who are really fearful, and they just become so proud of themselves. And I even had a mom of a 3-year-old tell me, she's like, he went to school the next week and he was telling all his friends that he was a surfer. it's just so cool to see, like, I'm like, okay, theoretically, I know this is supposed to work, but then I like see it work, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, gosh, there's so much self-esteem building, right? With like skills learned. So, absolutely love that. So thank you for sharing some of those successes and challenges. Are there any common myths you would like to demystify today about the role, you know, being seen as a surfing teacher, right? Versus like being a therapist and working on other needs. Any other?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest myths, and it's true for me too, is that you have to know how to surf to be what we define as a surf therapist. Because I barely could stand on a board, but I know, you know, I can tell which waves to catch with my athletes when I'm catching a wave. I can tell them how to stand up, how, where their feet should be, you know, but I'm not the best surfer in the world. Like, I'm still learning too. So one of the biggest ones, I think it goes to the accessibility of other OTs to jump into this world, is that you don't have to be the world's best surfer. You don't have to fully know how to surf. You can pick that up on the way. We have like a Coda who's working in the water with us this year, and she doesn't really know how to surf at all, but she knows the ins and outs of athlete, like the kind of athletes that we have. And that's what she brings to the table. And so that's one of my favorite things about Nome, is that we have these people who are great surfers, who are world-class surfers, who come and surf with us. And they can share that with me, but then now I can share my OT knowledge with them, and we can like build this community together. So I think that's one of the biggest ones, is that you don't have to know how to surf to join this world.
Oh, that is so, that's such a great news for me. That's going to be me in one of Naomi's weekend groups, you know? Yes. Yeah. But that is, and you know, I joke, right? But that's, I think for our listeners, right? Like, you know, this is not, you don't have to be a world-class surfer. You don't have to be surfing all your life. I think it's the passion and really using it as a modality, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, gosh, I was trying to rack my brain. I mean, I totally agree with that one. I'm a subpar surfer, I would say, but I know the ins and outs. I've been in the ocean enough to know. I mean, and I feel like you just have to be one step ahead of your kiddos, which I think I'm at least one step ahead. I don't know. I'm kind of stooped on the myths, but I mean, I think the one that just always comes up for me, like I mentioned, is what is surf therapy? I guess another myth is, like, kind of going off of what I said, is surf therapy isn't always just being in the ocean and surfing. Surf therapy is really the whole process from start to finish.
Yeah.
Being on the beach, getting your suit on. How do we feel about the environment around us?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like you talked about, how do we feel about other people and what that brings to the table in our surf experience. Just like surfing isn't just about surfing. There's so many elements of surfing, of like emotional processing and physicality, but it's not just the act of like paddling out and popping up on a wave.
Yeah. It's
everything from start to finish is what is encompassing for surf therapy.
Yeah. And I hear a lot of occupational therapy in there, right? Because we hold that holistic lens and we're able to look at all of these various aspects. And is that why you think we're really effective in this role, ladies?
I think the correct answer is yes, but no. Yeah.
Yeah. So. That's an affirmative.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's like there are so many areas that you're addressing if we're thinking of like the domains, the areas of occupation, right? Like it's not just play, it's not just leisure, like participation. It's, you know, you can do dressing, you can do social participation, you can do if you're working with like an adult, like you can do like health management, like is this them getting learning to be physically active, like participating in, you know, that for their health management. I think that there's so many areas, and then you break it down farther and the way we analyze the activity for individuals, I think that's really what we bring to the table is this breaking down that activity. And I think that that's another myth of what surf therapy is, because there's this global community, right, of surf therapy, and it's defined as using, you know, surfing as inherently as like a biopsychosocial aspect to building all those skills. But I think that when we come in as OTs, we define it differently because our brain works differently. Our scope is different. The way we attack the use of surfing as a modality is different from people who, you know, maybe just are surfers who have learned to jump on the back of a board with an athlete and they use that as surf therapy. And that is it therapeutic, don't get me wrong, but the way that what we bring to it, you know, provides so much more towards our occupational goals, or the kids' families' occupational goals.
I think I heard Naomi say that in the beginning, which is, you know, kind of something about, you know, whatever you do on the beach that kind of sort of transcends or oozes into, you know, after the session, right? Or into their daily lives. So great. Oh, so now that we have all this, you know, wealth of information, do you have any career advice aside from everything that you've already shared with us for any of our listeners who might be interested in following your footsteps? You're both, you know, paving the path for a whole lot of us. And any other tidbits of advice that you want to share that you think might be helpful?
I think to start, if it's something you're interested in, that there's surf therapy companies across, you know, the globe and across the United States, they're almost always looking for volunteers. So to get your foot in that door, or to dip your foot in the water, if you want a real analogy,
cute.
just reach out and see if there's a way that you can volunteer and see if it's something that you like. If you know, maybe you like the idea of it, and then you dip your foot in and you're like, maybe not. But volunteering is a great way to start to get involved and to start to show your interest. And I think these surf therapy organizations, like obviously with Gnome, see the value in our brains as OTs. And if you get your foot in the door as a volunteer, I think that you can really kind of open up a pathway to being more involved if it's something that you decide that you do enjoy after you volunteer.
Great advice.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic advice. And I can say that, you know, it's like something where I'm keeping my eyes and ears peeled for volunteers, because I want to be able to do some of more of the like peer group stuff because of the social aspects of surfing. And right now that's, you know, that's always something I'm welcoming. And then, I love that. Like, come and learn. And I'm sure you feel this way, Brooke, but I've like love teaching, and I'd be happy to kind of teach and guide. And I would say there's definitely, I feel like when you're just starting out as an OT, it's really, really, really important to be in a setting where you're surrounded by other OTs, or at least very least surrounded by other therapists. I know one of my first mentors who was incredible was a PT, but having that mentorship and really taking time to get the foundational skills as a therapist. Because when you go into an uncommon setting, you really can't see it, but underneath the surface, I'm thinking of another water analogy. We're kind of like these ducks that are like, our feet are paddling like this, like thinking, okay, how can I make surfing therapeutic? At least that's how my brain is. And so I would advise, like, you can do both at the same time, like Brooke is kind of doing, but definitely make sure you're pulling from mentors or a setting that's giving you the strong foundation of OT skills. So that when you transition into that uncommon setting, that you're having something to really like hold it up with, but don't be afraid to do both at once, like seeking out mentors in the field. Definitely don't be afraid to just jump in, because I mean, that's what I've done. And, and really that's, and really, I mean, so to speak, I guess as a new OT, even in a clinical setting, that's what I had to do too. I just had to jump in and start working with kids and really leaning in on my mentors. So yeah, have that solid foundation and then just go for it and just see what happens.
Yeah.
Thanks for that advice. I think our listeners are fortunate because I'm not, you know, you had Carly, right? I don't know how many other OT surfers there are out there in addition to Carly, but now there's the two of you in addition to Carly that at least I have in my Rolodex. You see Rolodex anymore? No, I just dated myself. But yes, and my contact list, I should probably say. And on that note, if our listeners wanted to follow you or be in touch, just to connect. I know, Naomi, I've already connected you with one of my current level two student is actually so into surf therapy. She was so excited about this interview because I've been, you know, talking about it. And she's actually presenting at the conference on surf therapy. Coming, you know, wherever it's going to be. I'm not sure if it's still going to be in Florida. I know there's a whole lot of, you know, there's a whole lot of controversy about that. That's all we'll say. But wherever it is, she's presenting. On that note, too, I think like here in California, that's something that you want to kind of look into, Naomi, presenting about surf therapy at the local associations.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. I hadn't even thought about that. I should definitely look into that.
Yeah. So I'll connect you with, you know, a couple of OTs that I know over here. And Brooke, please come visit us.
I want to. I will.
It's cold. It's going to be cold over there soon. You don't want to get out of there. So I know. Come over here.
I will.
Oh, so thank you again, ladies. This was such a great, stimulating, fun, informative conversation. And I'm so happy to be connected with the both of you now.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah, so good to be connected with you, Brooke.
Yeah, you too, Naomi. I'm so excited.
Yeah, me too. Thank you for taking the time, Patricia, and for all the work you're doing with your podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. It's such a joy. I mean, look at me. I'm like smiling. I get to meet people like you. And, you know, it's not even not to minimize the fun that we're having, but they're all this much fun because we get so excited to talk about, you know, the work that we're doing, right? And our passion about it just kind of oozes. And, you know, our listeners are able to really capture that passion in our voice. So thank you for sharing your passion with our listeners. I am absolutely sure that you're going to inspire so many. And don't be shocked if you get all these emails and phone calls just inquiring about your incredible work. So congratulations on your success so far. And I look forward to staying connected with you both.
Yes, me too. Thank you so much, Patricia.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.